the spirit of reconciliation, Mylomer Australia acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to the elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today. Welcome to My Conversations, Mylomer Australia's podcast series. These podcasts are written and produced by our Mylomer support nurses for people living with myeloma, their family and friends. We aim to deliver interesting and up-to-date information on myeloma in a portable and convenient way through our podcast shows.
Welcome everyone to this episode of My Conversations, a Myeloma Australia podcast. My name is Hayley Beer and I'm Manager of Nursing Programs and Services at Myeloma Australia, and I'm pleased to be your host today. This is part one of a two-part series where I'm joined by the wonderful Lauren Atkins, Co-Director of Encore Nutrition. Lauren is an advanced accredited practicing dietitian and accredited nutritionist with expertise in both oncology and haematology. She has worked in cancer care and survivorship for over 10 years and co-founded her business, Encore Nutrition, after having spent the first part of her career working as a senior dietitian at Peter MacCallum Cancer Centre, Royal Children's Hospital Cancer Centre, and Epworth Freemasons in Melbourne. She's lectured at numerous universities and contributed her knowledge and expertise to national cancer care frameworks. Lauren has undertaken advanced training in natural and integrative medicine to better advise individuals and groups on the safe and appropriate use of complementary therapies. She has vast experience in good nutrition to help manage side effects and symptoms of cancer from diagnosis through to survivorship and palliation. Lauren also has her own free-to-access podcast, Encore Nutrition, Two Peas in a Podcast, which I must say is a great listen and one we recommend. Welcome, Lauren.
Oh, what an intro. Thank you so much, Hayley. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Lauren. We're really excited, as I said, to have you here today. And many of our listeners will be aware that we at Myeloma Australia have a telephone support line that is available Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, and it's manned by specialist myeloma nurses around the country. And obviously, food and nutrition is a huge part of everyone's day-to-day life and something that can become a quite confusing minefield when diagnosed with a cancer like myeloma and going through treatment. And it's also one of those things that the carer can really get involved with and can help out help with side effects and the journey going through living with myeloma. But it can be quite a confusing minefield to wade through. So we've today brought you on for your expertise and to go through some of these common misconceptions or confusions or worries and concerns that we're hearing from the myeloma community and to get your expert advice on the best way to tackle these things.
Couldn't agree more. It is a confusing world out there. So yeah, hopefully I can bring some clarity today.
Great. So we'll get started with our questions. So the first one being very, very common from the myeloma community, that being myeloma being a cancer of the immune system, a lot of people are interested to know if there's a special diet or something that they can include in their diet to help boost their immune system.
So common, and particularly at the moment in the world that we're living in, the whole population is really keen to optimize their immune system and their immune function however possible. Now, I'd love to say that there's something specific that we can do to, in inverted commas, boost the immune system. While nutrition is very important to optimize our immune function, we can only reach a certain level. So there are things we can do to keep our bodies protected and safeguarded against infections. And nutrition is absolutely one of them. And eating a variety of foods, lots of plants, drinking enough fluid, moving your body and getting enough sleep are all really important lifestyle changes or factors to consider when thinking about our immune function. And some of the key players when we think about nutrition and the immune system are spices. So particular spices that are really rich in antioxidants can display antimicrobial properties. So what they do is they assist in naturally detoxifying things that enter into our body system. So adding things like garlic, onion, ginger to stir fries, or cinnamon and cloves to your porridge in the morning, or some turmeric chili or cumin to your curries can absolutely help your immune system to function as best as possible. Another really useful way to get your immune system working as well as possible is to include lots of really brightly colored fruits and vegetables, and to include the skins and seeds wherever possible. There's a huge amount of immune factors that actually reside in our gut, and a lot of the ways that infections can reach our body is through our digestive tract. And so if we can keep our gut really healthy, we can improve our or reduce our risk of becoming unwell from infection. We can also activate immune pathways directly from our gut. So including the skins and seeds of a variety of fruits and veggies can improve our gut health and in turn our immune system. We also want to make sure we are fueling our body really well to deal with any infections that come our way. If you can imagine, if your body was depleted of nutrients or really fatigued and running on empty, that it's really hard for it to fight back against any pathogens or infections that might come our way. So we want to make sure we fuel it well with slow release or low GI carbohydrate foods and reduce our simple sugars. So provide a sustained release of energy for our immune systems to function well. And we can do that by choosing whole grains, breads and cereals that are rich in grains, whole grains rather than processed white varieties, and include things like legumes and again, lots of veggies and fruits, and easing off sweet drinks, lollies, chocolates, cakes, biscuits, desserts, the highly sweet options.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably really some bad. Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, just getting back to basics, isn't it?
And absolutely, yeah. And look, there's lots of supplements on the market that will claim to boost your immune system. And absolutely, there are particular vitamins and minerals that are essential for our immune systems to function. But their research shows that many of those over-the-counter products that do claim to boost the immune system don't actually do so. And it's important to run by any supplements you do intend to take with your treating team, because there certainly can be interactions. And ultimately, we don't want you wasting your money on something that's not going to do a good job. So very happy for people to reach out to us or certainly chat to your treating team to make sure what you do intend to take is actually A, safe, and B, going to be helpful.
That's right. It can get very expensive if you go down that rabbit warren of supplemental vitamins and minerals. And it's great to hear that there are some great basic things you can do with your diet to help boost, give your immune system the best chance, I guess, bearing in mind that having myeloma and the treatments that a lot of people will be on at certain times will impair the immune system to a certain degree. But there are some things you can do to give it the best chance possible. And along a similar theme, when you are having treatment, often these medications can reduce one of our white cells called the neutrophils, which is the frontline soldier in the immune system that goes in to fight infections when they first arise. And there is a bit of literature out there in certain resources about following a neutropenic diet. Can you explain a little bit about what that is and if it's important to follow the neutropenic diet?
Yeah, for sure. And so the neutropenic diet is a style of eating that's been designed for people with weakened immune systems to reduce the risk of foodborne illness. So we want to reduce the risk of getting sick from food that we eat when your immune system is already low as a result of your treatment. Now, like you said before, we can't impact the level of your neutrophils directly with food, but we can reduce the risk that you get sick when you are neutropenic. So what the neutropenic diet entails is it involves choosing foods that and preparing them in a way that lowers your risk of becoming unwell and reduces the intake of any harmful bacteria or microbes. A lot of common sense in here. So washing your hands, don't eat raw eggs, don't eat 4-day-old leftovers from the fridge. But there are also certain foods like prepackaged salads, deli meats, soft cheeses that are best avoided if your immune system is weakened. Now, the neutropenic diet used to be really, really strict, and the research has allowed this to be liberalized quite significantly recently, because there's not a huge amount of evidence that a neutropenic diet in its really strict sense helps to reduce the risk of infection. And what we know is that it's necessary to be very careful about food safety and hygiene when you are neutropenic. But when you're no longer neutropenic, it's reasonable to liberalize your diet back to your normal way of eating, again, with that common sense prevailing. Mm-hmm. It's also no longer recommended that a neutropenic diet is required beyond 30 days post allograft. So if you've had an allogeneic stem cell transplant previously, you'd be on a neutropenic diet for a very long time, and that's no longer necessary beyond 30 days, according to the latest evidence.
It's so great that that information's been updated. And just to clarify there for our listeners, if you have had a stem cell transplant, there are two different kinds. One, an autologous, which meaning stem cells from yourself, and allogeneic, meaning stem cells from somebody else, a sibling or an unrelated donor. So is there evidence with autologous? Is that information changed or that remains?
So autologous is not as strict. Generally, once neutrophils have recovered and they're above 1.5, their diet would be liberalized. The allogeneic stem cell transplants have historically been stricter in that sense, because the body's under a little bit of extra pressure. But in saying that, every hospital and organization will have different protocols and ways of managing neutropenia. But I guess I'd like to empower you all to just ask the question to your team. If you're on a neutropenic diet for what seems like a long time, ask why and if it could be liberalized in any way.
That's a very good point. It is, it's always important to ask those questions, isn't it, to make sure that what you're doing is, you know, right for you and your circumstances. Okay, thanks, Lauren. Time to take a quick break and we'll be back in just a moment. At Myeloma Australia, we have a wide range of resources covering all aspects of living with myeloma. Head to the resources page on our website at www.myeloma.org.au or contact head office to order your copy on 03 9428 7444. You will also find us on social media. You can give us a like and a follow on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Welcome back. My name is Hayley Beer and I'm speaking with Lauren Atkins, all things nutrition and myeloma. And time for the next question. So going forward from that, there is widely known in the cancer area, I guess, of blogs and information out there on the internet that sugar should be avoided because it feeds cancer. What would you say to that theory that sugar might feed the myeloma?
Yeah, it's a question I get asked very, very regularly, Hayley. And the statement that sugar feeds cancer is a oversimplification of a really complex process. And what that statement suggests is that cancer relies solely on sugar for growth, which it doesn't. And it also implies that by avoiding sugar, that we can starve cancer cells. And we also can't do that. And although that may happen in a test tube, where you've got cancer cells in a test tube, if you remove sugar from that test tube, yes, the cancer growth will slow because there is no fuel. But in the human body, if we run out of sugar to fuel the cancer, the cancer's also got protein and fat to use for fuel, which would mean that it breaks down your muscle stores and your fat stores, preferably, unfortunately, your muscle stores, meaning that you will lose muscle mass. And so if the intention is to reduce cancer growth by starving the body of sugar, you'll actually starve your healthy cells before you starve your cancer cells. One also very frustrating tool that cancer cells have up their sleeve is that they're really good at generating a nutrient supply. They're very greedy and they're very good at accessing nutrients. And again, by reducing our sugar intake, it's going to impact your healthy organs before it impacts your cancer spread. And that's really important to be aware of, because what we don't want to do is restrict our diet to a point where we're losing our strength and our muscle mass, and therefore our energy and ability to do things every day, for no benefit for our cancer outcomes.
That's right. Fatigue's already a huge problem for those that are living with myeloma, and to further decrease your muscle mass by starving the muscles of nutrients would, further, I imagine, impact that level of fatigue that they're already feeling.
Absolutely. Not to mention the impact psychologically and socially of trying to navigate a sugar-free diet or a carbohydrate-free diet. It's incredibly challenging for insufficient reward.
Mm. So we want to reduce refined sugars, but we don't need to be so strict on that you're reducing all forms of sugar.
Absolutely right. So yeah, absolutely. Minimize refined processed sugars and those high glycemic index carbohydrates. But we still absolutely need to keep those complex slow release carbohydrates coming into the system so that our bodies can be primed to deal with the cancer and its treatments.
Great. Thank you. I'm sure it's made a lot of people understand that concept a bit more and reduce some of that fear around sugar intake. Mm-hmm. So myeloma is typically, the level of myeloma in one's blood is typically measured by a reading called paraprotein, which is abnormal protein in the body. Some people, are concerned that because they've got a high level of this abnormal protein in their body, they should also be limiting protein from diet sources as well. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, it's tricky because it's in the name, right?
Mm.
And so I completely understand why your mind would go there. If you're wanting to reduce your paraprotein, in theory, it makes sense to consider reducing your protein intake. But I can tell you right now that it is absolutely not the case, and very important that somebody who is going through myeloma treatment does not restrict their protein intake. In fact, people with myeloma often have higher protein requirements than the general population, up to 150% what they would normally need. And so unless you've been specifically advised by your oncologist to reduce your protein intake, or your hematologist, I should say, which really would only happen if you had challenges with your kidney function, very, very unlikely. It's absolutely important that you include regular quality sources of protein in your diet. Lean poultry, seafood, legumes, eggs, tofu, nuts, seeds, lean meat, really essential for that muscle mass that we were talking about before, to preserve your strength and your energy, not only just to do your daily activities, but to put you in a really good position to tolerate any treatment that you're faced with.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you. So everybody who has had treatment for myeloma will be familiar with something that one of our colleagues, Tracy Kings, calls the devil's tic-tacs, and that is steroids or dexamethasone. It comes with many, many side effects and challenges, very, very important in the crusade to try and eradicate as much myeloma as possible, but can also be quite tricky. And one of those side effects that can be bothersome is weight gain. Is there anything you can suggest to help with that steroid weight gain, or how it occurs, and any ways to combat that?
Yeah, very good question. I love that nickname. And do not stop your steroids. They are very important, like you said, an essential part of treatment. And you will know about it if you stop taking them, because you'll get a whole host of other issues that come along. But I completely understand the turmoil that can come after taking steroid-based medications, dexamethasone being one. And I just want to reassure the listeners that in many cases, the weight gained when taking corticosteroids is often related to swelling and water retention. And much of that water and swelling is lost when the steroids are weaned. And so that weight that is gained will come off just as quickly and easily as it came on. So take a deep breath, knowing that that is very likely. there are also some metabolic changes that happen when taking steroid-based medications. What they can unfortunately do is increase our appetite and drive us to eat more food, which in many cases is very helpful because your body needs more food when you're going through treatment. But it can also, they can also increase muscle loss or muscle atrophy, which can be detrimental for those, that strength and function that we've been mentioning throughout throughout this podcast today. And it can drive loss of muscle but gain in fat mass, which makes it even more important to focus on those lean quality sources of protein to help minimize the losses that occur when you are taking steroid-based medications. So rest assured that lots of the metabolic and, sorry, body composition changes when you're taking steroids is related to that water retention and swelling. And you'll have noticed that. You'll have felt puffy and swollen, and that's not a nice feeling. But equally, it's easily resolved once they're ceased.
That's right. And they can also chat to their doctor if it is really uncomfortable or worrying them. Just have a conversation with the doctor. They will be able to tell you when it's really important that you persevere, or if there's a point in time where you can maybe make some changes to help relieve that side effect at that
Absolutely.
Point
and look, equally, if you are struggling with things like that fluid retention or changes in body composition, do ask to speak with an oncology dietitian, because a few changes might just make you feel a lot more comfortable in your skin and a lot more energized and able just to face the day, which helps in your mindset about everything as well.
Absolutely. And on a similar note, I guess the next question refers to whether it's advisable to go on a weight loss, you know, try and lose some weight while you're on treatment for myeloma.
Yeah, good question. And it's really important to be mindful that during treatment, we always aim for weight maintenance. So a stable weight without weight loss. Because even a small weight loss of 3 kilos can actually indicate malnutrition during treatment. And what we know is that weight loss during myeloma treatment can reduce treatment tolerance and increase side effects. It can also extend the length of any hospital stays and reduce overall treatment outcomes. So there's plenty of reasons to try and aim towards a stable weight. Another good reason, because I can appreciate that a lot of people would see weight loss as maybe a silver lining of going through cancer treatment if they've been trying to lose weight over the years and all of a sudden it becomes a little bit easier. I'd like you to listen to this second reason, which is that when your body is faced with cancer treatment, and myeloma treatment in particular, puts a lot of stress on the body. And when you lose weight during myeloma treatment, you are far more likely to be losing your muscle mass than your fat stores. Now, what that means is not only that your body is weaker to tolerate treatment, but it also means that your metabolism is slowed long term and you're more likely to put on weight as fat down the track if you lose muscle during your treatment. So lots and lots of reasons to try and aim towards a stable weight during treatment, and again, to chat to a dietitian if you're not sure how best to approach that for you.
And I guess also a little bit off track for this topic, but in the same token, engaging physiotherapists and exercise physiologists to maintain that muscle mass, and which equates to more energy and, as you say, better coping and recovery.
Absolutely. We can't work independently. We all work as a team, and the impact of exercise in conjunction with nutrition therapies so much more powerful when combined than both of those things alone.
Yep, absolutely. So moving on to, I guess, some of the things to help with some side effects such as nausea with treatment, there, you know, things like or loss of taste as well. There's things like ginger and miracle fruit. Do you have some go-to recommendations for people that are struggling with, you know, it's easy to say keep a balanced diet free of refined sugars, but sometimes when you've got those steroid cravings or nausea and you just don't feel like eating those foods, do you have any tips on helping people get that nutrition in?
Yeah, for sure. And nausea is a real challenge. And first and foremost, I always chat through how a patient's taking their anti-nausea medications, making sure they understand how those medications actually work and optimize them to really keep the nausea at as low a level as possible. But certainly there are some complementary therapies. So complementary meaning taken alongside conventional therapy that have been shown to reduce the severity of, in particular, chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting. And ginger is one of those. So doses of 1.5 grams a day have been shown to be helpful. Often they're given as capsules or as a purified extract of a ginger root, but also very suitable to include ginger in a tea, in your curries, in your stir fries. If you like the taste, add it to foods that you're already eating, add it to your smoothies. But do be aware of the blood thinning effects of ginger and the impact that it can have on your blood sugar levels. So it can reduce your blood sugar levels. So important just to be mindful of some of the side effects that can happen when taking complementary therapies such as ginger, particularly if using them as a supplement as opposed to the whole food itself. It's always safer to eat ginger as ginger than it is to eat ginger as a capsule.
That's a great distinction between the two.
Yeah, foods always tend to be safer. Similar story for curcumin or turmeric, which is a spice that's often, you know, if you Google it, you'll often see that there are claims that it can impact your cancer growth, cancer spread. And while there is some emerging evidence that it might have some impact, it's really important that we're careful how we take it and also that we don't put too much emphasis on the impact it can have, perhaps beyond what it actually can achieve. So yes. I want to actually preface this by saying, this is a good question for you, Hayley. Did you know that up to 60% of current anti-cancer agents are derived from natural sources such as plants and microorganisms? That's more than half. They're derived from natural sources. So I would love to say that turmeric or curcumin can treat, prevent, or cure myeloma, but if it could, it would be mainstream medicine. We would have put it right up there with the dexamethasone, the happy TikToks. But the evil TikToks?
Devil's TikToks.
Devil's TikToks. Unfortunately, the impact has not been shown to be that profound. So although there is some growing evidence that curcumin, the active ingredient in turmeric, can help protect our cells and our DNA from damage, can activate enzymes that maybe can kill cancer cells, it doesn't do so in a way that's as meaningful as chemotherapy is. So if you like turmeric, add it to your curries. Go for it. Have a turmeric tea. It's actually really nice. But do be mindful of talking to your treating team or your oncology dietitian, your pharmacist, before you take any supplements, because they may interact with other medications that you're taking, including things like blood thinners, or they might impact the efficacy or the effectiveness of the anti-cancer treatment that you're having.
Okay, thanks, Lauren. That concludes part one of this two-part series. Keep an eye out for part two coming soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of My Conversations. We'd love to hear from you, so send us your questions or topic ideas to our email address, nurses@myeloma.org.au. Whilst the advice and opinions of our guests is welcomed, this podcast provides general information and is not intended to replace medical care or the advice of your treating team. Please talk to your doctor if you have any questions about your diagnosis or treatment. Your doctor can answer your questions talk with you about your treatment goals and provide you with extra support.